Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, I'm inviting you to join me in our virtual living room as we hold another open house. Those of you who are new to San Francisco may not be aware of the profound influence of the gentleman sitting here with me, an attorney, politician, and jurist. Quentin Lewis Kopp has been a California attorney for 70 years. He was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, where he served for 15 years, right up until he was elected to the California State Senate, serving three terms before reaching his term limits. His archives include some 35 feet of textual records on paper and five audio cassettes. Mr. Kopp has chaired the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, the California Law Revision Commission, and the Little Hoover Commission. He has also served on the board of directors of the San Francisco Legal Aid Society, as well as the Ethics Commission of San Francisco. He presently is a member of San Francisco's War Memorial Board of Trustees and president of the Korean War Memorial Foundation. Always one to speak his mind and be frank, Senator Kopp hosted a weekly radio talk show on KGO AM, as well as a political commentator on KTVU Channel 2, until, as the conclusion of his time in the state Senate grew near, Governor Pete Wilson appointed then-Senator Kopp to sit as a judge on the San Mateo County Superior Court. On January 2, 1999, Kopp was sworn in as a judge of the San Mateo County Superior Court, serving as a general criminal and civil trial judge until 2010. After retiring from the Superior Court bench, Judge Kopp has maintained an office in West Myrtle. He has been of counsel to multiple law firms, remains active to this day. He writes for the West Side Observer, as well as the Harvard Law Review. If you don't know of Supervisor, Senator, Judge Quentin Kopp, you're either new to the area or just haven't been looking around too hard. If you have questions about the career of a legendary attorney, politician, jurist, activist, about his views on public policy or governmental ethics, or perhaps what some of the issues are today, perhaps you want to learn how Bart got to the airport or what's going on with high-speed rail, our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that retired Judge Kopp, as our other attorney guests, can't provide you precise legal advice. They're not going to have all the facts related to your case any more than a doctor should diagnose your child a few seconds into a phone call. But we're happy to pass along political and legal principles to assist you in your own decision making. As always, you can call with any question for Judge Kopp about his legal career, his leadership in San Francisco, or the state senate, or as a jurist, his views of government right now. You don't have to jump into the exact spot we may be in our conversation. And with that, I'm honored to say, Quentin Lewis Kopp, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's deja vu all over again, and a pleasure to be in a radio studio. It is a reminder of a prior part of my life, which began as you identified it at KGO Radio in the 1970s, and that was when I started in the hours between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. on Sunday into Monday morning, and it was not jocularly referred to as the dog meat hours for KGO Radio.
You know, we've all heard a bit about your distinguished political career. Tell us a little bit about the path that brought you there.
It started in 1935 when I was 7 years old and living in my city of birth, Syracuse, New York, about 250 miles north and west of metropolitan New York City. My father, who was an immigrant and served in the U.S. Army during World War I after graduating Brooklyn College of Pharmacy, was a Democrat, and he ran for county treasurer. On election day, I was in a hospital having been diagnosed with infantile paralysis, now called polio. My father was running in Onondaga County, which had about 15, 16 villages and the city of Syracuse. The villages were mostly dedicated to agriculture, and they were Republican-leaning villages. He carried the vote in the city of Syracuse, but lost in the county outside of Syracuse, and lost to the incumbent, a Republican who, as county treasurer, could provide benefits to the Republican opponent by reason of getting a contract to supply coal to the county, and including the city of Syracuse. And it made an indelible mark on my life, as I vowed that some time in the future I would avenge my father's loss, which I was able to do in 1971 with election to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He died at the age of 77. But he was still alive and able to campaign with me during the fall of 1971 successfully for the office of a member of the Board of Supervisors.
You know, you spent years advocating for a better San Francisco. I'd like your thoughts on the city as it now stands. Is it really as bad as we're told? And if it was, I'd like you to tell us what you might do if you were in a position to try to fix it. Where would you start?
I don't think it's as bad as all the soothsayers and others do, the others for political reasons. But it is worse than I can remember during the almost 28 years in elected public office in San Francisco. And it's a reflection of a state of affairs which began during the mayoral administration of Art Agnes, who was elected mayor in 1987, and that was the advent of homeless people sleeping on the sidewalks, and some of them in streets in San Francisco. There were many homeless people sleeping in the plaza on the east side of City Hall, between Polk Street and Taylor. And it was dubbed Agnosville. I was not a political supporter of Art Agnos. I was a member of the California State Senate and the only independent in the California legislature, having re-registered in May of 1985 as an independent after being a Democrat since I turned 21, which was the requirement in order to be a registered voter prior to the time that it was lowered to 18. I consider Art Agnos today a friend, but it was so vexing that I was part of an effort to support former police chief Frank Jordan in 1991. As mayor, Frank Jordan did nothing about the homeless problem, and he was succeeded by former Assembly Speaker Willie Brown, who had two terms. He did nothing about it, and it's continued to grow in numerically and otherwise. And added to that is the use of drugs in San Francisco, including outdoor usage in parks and in neighborhoods. And I admire our present mayor, London Breed, whom I never knew until about 8 years ago. And she is a remarkable woman who was born in the housing projects of San Francisco, raised there by her grandmother, graduated Galileo High School, and then entered and graduated in 4 years from the University of California at Davis, and later was elected to the Board of Supervisors, was elected president of the Board of Supervisors by her peers on the board, and is facing concerted opposition from at least three candidates, with the probability that a fourth candidate will file papers to run for mayor sometime this spring. And it will be a very hotly contested election for mayor. In terms of solving the problem of homelessness, which, in my opinion, has led, together with the pandemic, to some of the changes in San Francisco, will require a concerted effort, not only by the mayor, but all 11 of the members of the Board of Supervisors. A government body which is divided and which is divisive. It'll also depend upon programs which meet legislative requirements of the state of California and judicial requirements of the United States Constitution and provisions of the United States Code. The mayor, probably better with her life background, knows about homelessness and the lack of housing, affordable and capable of usage by people who either are unemployed or otherwise impoverished. And I have full faith in her ability. if given cooperation by members of the Board of Supervisors to rectify these present debilitating and unhappy conditions. I believe strongly in the pursuit of criminal sanctions against people who use illegal drugs and narcotics. Apparently, this fentanyl is now the popular drug for usage. And I believe strongly in the ability of municipalities to protect the neighborhoods and the streets and roads of their particular municipality. And that includes San Francisco. That will mean court decisions which enable the mayor, together with the Board of Supervisors, to formulate policies that provide treatment for addicts and addiction. And I'm familiar with addiction, with a son now in his late 50s who has been a so-called recovering addict for about 20 years and faithfully pursues every night after work a program of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, which deals with narcotic addiction. And that kind of program is what is needed on a very large basis in San Francisco.
You know, the mayor submitted three propositions in last night's ballot. One of them, I will confess I haven't done a deep dive into it. I haven't done a deep dig, but one of the propositions ties the receipt of assistance to agreeing to some type of drug testing, and in the event of a failed test, requiring a certain level of treatment. Is that going to likely face a constitutional challenge?
I believe it will. I'm not personally familiar with individuals in San Francisco or organizations which question any kind of compulsory act on the part of the municipality applicable to an addict. So I therefore foresee that it will. She also had two other measures, as you point out, which were approved by voters. All three were approved by voters. And I think that's evidence of the fact that the mayor is more popular and more liked than the percentage of voters and non-voters who comprise the polling subjects that indicate that she has less than a 50% approval rating. I believe she's going to run number one in November, and I am indeed an admirer of hers, not simply because we share the same birthday, August 11th, different years for sure, and I'm an appointee of hers on the War Memorial Board of Trustees in the Veterans Building on Van Ness Avenue in San Francisco.
Let me turn it to one of our callers. We have Peter from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Jeff. Good job tonight. I have a question for Judge Kopp.
Certainly. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. Judge Kopp, you've been a dedicated public servant for so many years, decades, and there are many, many people that would like to follow your lead of becoming a public official and serving the public interest. However, there are so many different groups that are... There are so many groups out there that are terrorist groups, gang members, and others that are committing violence in our society, and they are scaring public officials. They're threatening public officials with death. They're swatting public officials, and generally, I think, scaring people from serving in public office. What advice would you give to people who want to run for office? And I'm taking into account that you yourself received a candy bomb from the Symbionese Liberation Army back around 1975 or 6, along with Supervisor Barbara Gelada, and it could have blown you up and your family and certainly destroyed your whole career and your life. So what advice would you give to people that would like to enter public service but might be intimidated to do so?
Be fearless and pay your dues, to use a trite expression. I started campaigning in 1958 for a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Attorney General. He later became a justice of the California Supreme Court. His name was Stanley Mosk. He was from Los Angeles. And the following year, 1959, I campaigned for a female member of the Board of Supervisors who was running for re-election, a widow whose husband had been killed during World War II in the Pacific. And in 1960, I campaigned for U.S. Senator John F. Kennedy for President of the United States. And then in 1971, I campaigned for a couple of supervisors. I was active in two Democratic clubs in San Francisco for a short period of time. I was an appointed member of the Democratic County Central Committee. The expression is pay your dues, and that's applicable. You've got to pay your dues. And that means being active and devoting time and effort to volunteer for campaigns and volunteer for service on a city board or a city commission, not for money, but to give your time, attention, and your qualities of heart and mind to the people of the city and county of San Francisco. And by the time I became a candidate in 1971 for the Board of Supervisors, I had spent about 14 years doing that, and I felt prepared to be a member of the Board of Supervisors. And I also like the fact that local office, city council, or Board of Supervisors is not a partisan election.
So with that, let me ask you a follow-up question. We have about 4 minutes before we have to break. But we talked a little bit about the propositions that were on last night. I think another measure looks to expand police powers and allows them to chase fleeing suspects who commit misdemeanors. As a practical matter, I don't think that has a lot of legal power behind it, in the sense that I think that the police have power to pursue misdemeanors when that misdemeanor is committed in their presence, and with a couple of other exceptions. But rather, I think it's a matter of policy within the city. But do you see these propositions as really holding the answer, or at least to make a dent in the problem?
I do. They will make a dent, and they may hold an answer. I believe in law enforcement, even though as a lawyer, I was never a prosecutor. I practiced some criminal law and defended people who were accused of both misdemeanors and or felonies. But law enforcement that adheres to legal requirements that are imposed by the legislature and or the judicial branch of government is essential. And that means allowing the police within the limits of recognized authority to perform their duties and responsibilities. And it includes a police chief who is a leader in that respect, and a mayor and a governing board which supports the ability of police officers to do that. And that means dedication to eradicating illegal use of narcotics, illegal invasion and use of public thoroughfares, and city policy which provides the welfare of places for unemployed and unable residents of San Francisco to live in housing supplied by the people of San Francisco and businesses operating in San Francisco who pay the taxes that enable places for low-income housing, and also places for people who have no other place to sleep and to live.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
We talked a little bit about the problems with drugs and homelessness. Do you think Care Court holds the answer?
Well, I don't think that does hold the answer. It's one tactic which permits some discretion and less than simple adherence to statutes of the state of California, ordinances of the city and county of San Francisco, or rulings of appellate courts. And I have seen that at work with respect to drug courts. So I do think it may not, it's not the entire answer, but it is a tactic which should be employed.
We've seen a growth of homelessness in recent years, and a lot of the politicians think or seem to think that the answer is simply building more housing. Can we build our way out of this problem?
Well, if we mean San Francisco, as I will construe that to be the case, there is a upsetting to me misunderstanding about the population problem of San Francisco. San Francisco, during the 1970s, had a population of about 715,000 to 742,000. And then it soared after the advent of technology. And in 2019, the population was approximately 876,000 or 7,000 people. 4 years later, that population had declined to about 807,000. There is a popular political settlement with groups like this YIMBYs, Yes in My Backyard, of scrapping with NIMBYs, No or Not in My Backyard, that San Francisco needs more housing. That's a myth. Park Merced, which has almost 3,000 units, has a vacancy rate which hovers between 25% and 35%. Stonestown Mall on 19th Avenue in the southwestern part of San Francisco obtained permits a couple of years ago to change some of the commercial offices and stores into housing units, rental housing. It obtained all the permits, and that's an arduous process at City Hall. And that was 2 years ago, and it hasn't built a single unit of housing. The reason is because there's no market for that. Now, low-income housing is a different cup of tea, and low-income housing requires for the safety of San Franciscans and the welfare of people who live on the streets or sidewalks needs to be supplemented in a responsible way. And that should be the ambition of Mayor Breed and supervisors to do it in a reasonable and a sensible and in an effective way.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we're holding an open house with attorney, politician, jurist, Quentin Lewis Kopp. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question for my guest. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And I'd like to change direction a little bit with our conversation. One of the areas you've written about of late ties well into a show we did last week. We were talking about the use of artificial intelligence in the workplace. And one of the recent articles I've read from you, from Harvard Law Review, speaks about the problems of using artificial intelligence for judging or in lieu of judges. And you spoke about that as being a problem. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I believe in what I'll call personal functioning of courts of law. It has been frustrating and saddening because of the pandemic to see personal appearances by lawyers and by participants in civil disputes and sometimes even in criminal actions by means other than a personal appearance. Early in this century, as a judge, I experienced in what's called the law in motion department of a superior court in any county of the 58 in California, use of the telephone for lawyers to dispense with personal appearances before a judge in favor of arguing by telephone. I'm a believer in personal experiences and in personal appearances, so that as a judge, a person can evaluate facts and legal precedents and arguments over the meaning of prior appellate decisions of the California Court of Appeal and the California Supreme Court in person. And I am particularly concerned and a bit upset that in a administrative law part of the city and county of San Francisco, that hasn't been practiced. If you're dissatisfied with the assessor's evaluation of the value of your real estate, whether it's a residence or whether it's a commercial building, you have the right to appeal the assessor's decision to what's called an assessment appeals board composed of three residents of the city and county of San Francisco or San Mateo County, wherever you may be. And unfortunately, in San Francisco, that assessment appeals board has continued to hold hearings and listen to arguments by Zoom or by telephone instead of compelling a personal appearance by the assessor or the assessor's deputy or deputies and by the property taxpayer and his or her representative, if he or she has a lawyer or a specialist in appraising the value of real estate. And I suspect that's a natural outcome of COVID-19 and what we've been through, and to a lesser extent will continued to face in the next 4 years or more. I don't know when will ever be cured, but again, that's an example of what I consider a defect in a present system of adjudicating differences of opinion or disputes over facts.
And those who were listening last week when we did our broadcast on artificial intelligence in the workplace, this can be done by individuals, but when they make decisions using an algorithm instead of the human connection and being involved, when things are done by a machine that rates or by a formula that rates rather than being direct, it also lends itself to not being completely visible, not being completely transparent. And throughout the state of California, judges are using these algorithms every day to determine whether someone gets released, whether they're subject to bail, or whether bail is even made unavailable to them. We have moved farther into the realm of artificial intelligence than many of us are comfortable with. Let me take a call from Coco in San Francisco. Coco, welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're on the air. I think we just lost Coco. Coco, if you hear us, feel free to call us back. I think we just lost your call. But in the meantime, one of the areas of state law that you were involved with for a number of years in this was the transportation infrastructure, both through the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and also through the Senate Transportation Committee. From what you see today, how are we doing now?
I think, again, because of the pandemic, it's difficult to evaluate how we're doing now. As you note, I was a member of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission by appointment or vote of my colleagues on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, and I became chairman of that commission for 2 years before being elected to the state Senate. And in the state Senate, I was appointed chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee during my first year as a state senator and served as such for 11 years, which is the second longest in the history of the state of California legislature. One of what I thought was my signal and most significant achievement was a statute in 1996, of which I was the author, that organized the California High Speed Rail Authority. And the requirement of that commission or authority, as I'll call it, was to build high-speed electrified rail in the state of California.
But here we are so many years later. It's 2024. What happened with high-speed rail? Is it really coming?
No. It was destroyed after I left the commission. I was a judge, as you pointed out, in San Mateo County Superior Court. I served 5 years until I was eligible to retire, and then I served another 5 years in what's called the Assigned Judges Program, where the Chief Justice can send you to sit in courts that are short of judges and need judges to handle the caseload in those particular courts. And under the law, I was allowed to serve on state and local agencies. And the governor appointed, or the state senate appointed me to the California High-Speed Rail Authority in 2006, and I served as chairman for 3 years, including 2008, when we persuaded the legislature to put on the ballot a $9.95 billion general obligation bond of the state of California for voters to approve or reject. And in the 2008 November election, the voters approved that narrowly, 52-48%, and we embarked upon a plan to run high-speed rail, which by definition is electrified. It's not diesel. Electrified so as to give you the ability to travel from San Francisco to Los Angeles in 2 hours and 40 minutes, which was outlined in the general obligation bond read and approved by California voters. Instead, after I left that authority and other people were appointed, there's only one original member still on that commission, a woman from San Diego, the plan changed. So that the plan now is to build 119 miles of track between Merced and Bakersfield in the Central Valley.
And every day five people will ride it.
Yeah, because Amtrak already runs a train in the Central Valley. And secondly, what isn't being told by the media, what isn't being told, and certainly not by the High Speed Rail Authority, which now has about 300 people working in its offices in Sacramento, is that what's being planned is not even electrified. It's diesel track, and not a single bit of track has been laid. The only thing that money has been used for is bridges and viaducts between Merced and Bakersfield. In fact, our plan doesn't even take you to Bakersfield. It takes you to Wasco. It's about 30 miles north of Bakersfield, and you have to take a bus to get to Bakersfield.
But Wasco does have a prison, so perhaps some of the guards can use this in their commute. Let me turn it to Coco from San Francisco. Welcome to your legal rights.
Yes, it's a different issue. Why are we allowing bikes on sidewalks to a point that when you walk, you are not safe anymore? They sneak up on you. They go so fast. You just have to take your life in your own hands. Why are they allowed? And no lights. Many have no lights at all. It's bad for cars, bad for anybody who walks. What can be done? What do they do?
And when you talk about this, Coco, you're talking about within the city of San Francisco, correct?
Certainly.
Because I know state law would not be favorable to this, but Coco's asking why we allow bicycles on what's normally held as pedestrian right-of-ways on the sidewalks.
That's
but why are the bikes sneak up from behind? I had one from behind and from front, and I saw the one in front turn, go to the right, and suddenly the bike from behind almost hit me.
It seems to me, just this is me answering, and I'll give Judge Kopp a chance to join in a moment, but it seems to me this is the type of a thing that the mayor was looking toward with one of the propositions last night. Right now, police within the city of San Francisco are discouraged from misdemeanors, much less infractions, and discouraged from engaging people.
Yeah, but
that's more political. That's not a question of state law saying that. That's a question of the politics of San Francisco. And it seems to me that with at least one of these propositions, Mayor Breed is trying to make a dent in that and to try and encourage the police to reengage with people on smaller offenses than felonies. Have I read that correctly?
Yes.
Why do they have no lights? I mean, I grew up on a bike in Europe. You had to have a front and back light.
You still are required under California law to have those lights when you ride at night.
It doesn't help.
That is correct.
For cars.
Coco, I don't mean to disagree with you, but I think you didn't hear what I said. What I said was that the policies in the last 5 years, this is entirely local, it's entirely within the police departments, they've tried not to engage people nearly so much as they did, whether it's minor traffic infractions where they're not enforcing them and cars and bicycles alike are not being pulled over. Some of that is born of the pandemic. Some of that is born of a shortage of police and virtually every agency in the state. Part of that is born of a culture where people have really reacted to police abuses, some of them real, some of them imaginary. We're going to have a show on that in the next few weeks, and you'll hear more about that and what we might do to reverse that trend. And I don't mean to disagree with you, but I don't think the real problem is the law. I think the real problem is getting police back out there to be engaged in situations that may endanger you.
There's a couple other aspects of it, Jeff, bear recitation. I admire bicyclists. My older son, a criminal defense lawyer in Los Angeles, has bicycled over countries in Asia and, of course, the western United States, not just California, but Utah, Idaho, and other states. And bicycling is healthy and it's good for people. But there's an injustice, too. A motorist pays taxes to operate his or her motor vehicle. We pay both federal and state gasoline taxes. California's state gas tax is the highest in the country, 57 cents per gallon. And that has been occurring ever since the 1920s, and it's responsible for the United States highway system, which began under then-President Dwight David Eisenhower.
And part of the sale of that was that you have these large interstate highways, not only to move people, but also to move troops when necessary.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank God it's never been necessary. We're very short on time. I want to take this last call, which is from Lisa in Oakland. Lisa, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to sort of reiterate what I believe Coco was trying to say, and I know you were trying to point out that the laws are there, they're just not being enforced. But the fact that they are not being enforced is really a problem, and it's a danger for pedestrians. It's not only bicycles, it's motorized bicycles, even motorcycles.
And motorized scooters, don't leave those out. They're a problem, too.
No.
Well, but can I just please say what I was going to say? It's a danger just walking on the sidewalk, and these people on wheels, they're usually men, they're usually young men, and they usually target women. And they play chicken with you. And it's not a daily thing, it's a multiple occurrences per block thing. Just commuting to and from the ferry building to my office. So I just wanted to support what Coco was trying to point out. It is a danger, and they're going fast, and they're on motorized vehicles of every form imaginable, and they're coming straight at you, and something needs to be done about it. I'm really tired of it.
I hope that one of these propositions that addresses getting the police to reengage does work towards that. The laws are there. I only hope that there's some measure to enforce them. I hate to cut you off, Lisa, but we are out of time. Judge Kopp, I promised I'd give you about, we're down to 2 minutes, but I want to give you 2 minutes for any closing thoughts you have.
I'm, first of all, very pleased that this show, which I haven't been on in 25 years, is still on KALW, and people can take advantage of it. Jeff, you certainly have such a wide and long history of experience in the law and in the courts of the state of California that it is a service to the public for spending an hour each week in this. I think that we're going to see a local mayoral election and supervisor election in November that will return London Breed as our mayor. I don't know who will be the supervisors. Ex-Mayor Frank Jordan and Robert Gouchard, a resident of the Sunset District, and I are co-chairing a proposed ballot measure to restore at-large voting for members of the Board of Supervisors and changing supervisors' elections to odd number years so voters in San Francisco can concentrate on the people who represent us at the City Hall. And because of state law passed in 2005, the supervisors will still have to live in a district, and there'll be 11 districts, but all the voters who are eligible to vote in San Francisco will be able to vote for six slots 1 year, and then 2 years later in an odd number year for five. And I hope listeners from San Francisco will join us in signing the petitions to qualify by July 8th of 2004. This proposed initiative, which requires almost 50,000 valid, legitimate San Francisco voters to sign the petition. And thank you, Jeff, for giving me the pleasure and also the honor of being able to communicate with the not just San Franciscans, but Oakland residents, and I hope San Mateo. Maybe my next favorite county in the nine Bay Area counties. Thank you.
And the pleasure's all ours. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight we've had an open chat with a local legend within the legal and political communities. My guest tonight has been attorney, politician, and jurist, Quentin Lewis Kopp. We're working on such future programs as police reform 5 years after George Floyd and immigration consequences of minor criminal convictions. Please come back to Your Legal Rights next week, where, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to all of you for listening, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe, have a good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.